This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Erlene McMichael introduces us to the new multimedia Welcome to Kalamazoo event that's debuted at Kalamazoo's Art Hop for new residents to get a quick download about the city's history, attractions, and key programs. But first, Bill Cobbs is one of the four Democrats running for his party's nomination for governor. He has not held political office before. He is a former executive for Xerox. Bill Cobbs, thank you very much for being here.
Gordon, thank you for having me.
First of all, tell us a little bit more about yourself beyond your experience with Xerox and why it is you're running for governor.
So I was born and raised in Detroit, lived on a street called Lawrence between 12th and 14th. As a young kid, I got to actually see the tanks rolling down 12th Street during the 67 riot. When I graduated from high school in 1970, I went to the University of Michigan for a year. After that, my folks and I ran out of money, so I enlisted in the United States Navy. While I was in the Navy, I was fortunate enough to be selected for the Navy Boost Program. It stands for Broadened Opportunities for Officer Selection and Training. That program allowed me to return to the University of Michigan and complete my undergraduate education. I then completed my naval service. When I had done that, I had gotten admitted to Wayne State University Law School. While I was going to law school, I was a Detroit cop and did that for 4 years, all while I was in law school. When I finished, I took an entry-level job at Xerox, and over the course of my Xerox career, I eventually became the Global Vice President for Public Sector. I started that division in 1994 with eight people, and over an eight-year period, we built it into a billion-dollar division, employing over 2,500 people around the world. I met my wife, Lisa, at the University of Michigan, and we've been a team for the last 38 years. I've got two adult children, Will and Brooke, and I've got a very precocious four-year-old granddaughter, Kennedy. And I'm running for governor because I think most people who are probably listening to this program know that we can be doing better here. And it's fundamentally time to get Michigan back on track.
Okay, how do we get back on track? For instance, let's start with education.
Education is absolutely key. You know, we've had public education in Michigan under attack for the last few decades. And we've seen our educational standing decrease every single year. And here's the thing that I don't think that we get, that we truly understand. In America, education is the primary gateway to any kind of social mobility. If we don't provide our children with the right kind of education, their ability to move in both the economic and social world is diminished. It almost, in fact, doesn't exist. We also have to recognize that it is the government's responsibility to provide education for our children. And we've moved to this perspective that privatization of education is a good way to go. And, you know, even though we've had charter schools in Michigan for well over two decades, we don't have any empirical data to support the notion that they're delivering a better education to our children. So we got to get refocused. You know, I've said as an ex-governor of the state, one of the things I want to do regarding education is to return vocational training to every single high school. Every child doesn't want to go to or can't go to college. And we've got to be providing them with a pathway to a good life. If we return vocational training to every single high school, we can almost guarantee that when we graduate a child, they've got the skills they need to go out and make a decent living.
Does Governor Snyder then have something of the right idea with his proposal to boost skilled trades in Michigan?
I think it's a good idea, but I think we've got to really get that program rolling in our high schools, because if we focus primarily on the unions and junior colleges providing that training, we're leaving it to chance, because, you know, one of the challenges that young folks have in terms of junior college is how are they going to pay for it? You know, we've seen the cost of education rise astronomically in this state. And I believe that we can start that process in the high school level and help them to avoid some of those cost issues. The unions are only going to train so many people, so we can't use that as a fundamental delivery mechanism for that kind of training.
You say that you want a pretty ambitious infrastructure plan for the state. Where would you get the money for that?
Well, I've said I want to launch a $60 billion infrastructure plan. that will run for the next 25, 30 years. Now, clearly, that's aggressive. And I'm probably the only person talking about this. But here's the reality. If we don't do it, the price is only going to go up. And we know that we're living in a state where our roads are horrible. I always tell people that Flint is really a canary in the coal mine, because what happened in the city of Flint was primarily a result of infrastructure that had not been addressed for decades. And it's an indicator of what can happen in any city in our state. So how do we get there? I want to float a 30-year municipal bond. I want to do something else unusual to service that bond. I think it's time that Michigan really deploy a 21st century tax policy. You know, it doesn't make sense that in our state, it doesn't matter whether you make $20,000 a year or $1 million, we all pay the same 4.25% tax rate. I want to move to a graduated tax so that your tax is really based on income. Now, that would not impact a family that had a household income less than $200,000. They'd stay at 4.25%. Any household with an income greater than that would be impacted by the new tax structure. That tax structure would have a top rate on it of 10%. For someone or a family to be paying 10%, they'd have to have a household income greater than $600,000. I don't think it's a burden if you're making $600,000 that you pay a higher tax rate and you really pay your fair share of maintaining this infrastructure model that we need to lead decent lives in this state.
How ambitious is that? I mean, I can imagine that's going to require a constitutional amendment.
It's going to require a constitutional amendment. But here's the thing that we all need to recognize. We're going to have to do something regarding our tax structure, because next year, when we go into 2019, if we haven't fundamentally addressed some of the things that we're doing fiscally in this state, by the time we hit the fourth quarter, our general fund will be empty. And nobody wants to get caught with that surprise, because, you know, what will happen if we aren't prepared, if we aren't making the right kind of moves, is that we will go to citizens and say, we're going to cut essential services. And when you, you know, when you start talking about doing less in terms of snow removal, doing less in terms of managing waste, people sit up and pay attention.
You brought up Flint. If you were the governor right now, would citizens in Flint have to worry about getting free bottled water?
Not at all. In fact, I've said that, you know, I'm really disturbed that the governor consistently talks about Michigan's rainy day fund and the fact that it has almost $1 billion in it. But the most significant crisis that we've had in this state, Flint, has not been addressed with that rainy day fund. If Flint isn't a rainy day, whatever will be in this state?
What is the point at which you think it is reasonable for the state to say, we've put free bottled water out there, but conditions are back to normal and we are going to cease doing that?
Well, see, that's a tough issue, Gordon, because, you know, if any of us were living in a city where through malfeasance, the government had actually poisoned our citizens, we would be very reluctant to believe them when they said, it's all over. There's no problem now. Everything's back to normal. I think that we have got to earn the trust of the folks in Flint once again, because we betrayed them, and we got to fix it.
On your website, you say that we need an honest assessment of our firearms policy. What would that include if we were to sit down and try to have a rational, reasonable discussion about guns and safety in Michigan?
So as a former police officer and a gun owner myself, I can tell you that I cringe today when I think about the fact that we have taken the Second Amendment and turned it upside down. You know, it was never meant to say that there would be no regulation of firearms. It was never meant to take battlefield weapons and put them in the hands of ordinary citizens and say, that's a good idea. We have got to have some mindful gun policy in this state that stops putting forward legislation like what was proposed last year, that we allow citizens to go out and buy weapons without a permit, put them in their cars and carry them without permits, and that was going to be a safe thing. I was really amazed that more members of the law enforcement community didn't just come out and say, this is nuts. We owe it to everybody in our community to make sure that we balance the right of gun ownership with the overall safety in our communities.
There's a lot of conventional wisdom on politics this year that says that the energy is really coming from the left. Does the biography of business executive, Navy veteran, former police officer fit well with the idea of progressive politics?
So, you know, that it's interesting that you asked that question, because one of the most frustrating things about this election cycle for me is the way as Democrats that we have absolutely fractured our party by this notion that I'm a progressive. Well, no. I'm a super progressive. I'm a neoliberal. And the basic lack of understanding that we have got to recognize that there's room in this tent for all kinds of thought process. But at the end of the day, we're all Democrats and focused on making sure that we create public policy that is in the best interest of our citizens. You know, when people ask me how would I characterize myself as a Democrat, I say, well, I'm a humanist, because I go back to FDR. And, you know, you go to Washington, there's a monument to FDR. And on that monument, it says that the test of progress is not whether we can add more to the abundance of those who have much, but rather, are we prepared to provide enough for those that have too little? Now, I'll let people judge for themselves what kind of Democrat I am.
So the Democrats recently held what was called an endorsement convention. This is not official, but it now would appear that Jocelyn Benson's going to be the nominee for Secretary of State. Dana Nessel will be the nominee for Attorney General. Of course, we know Debbie Stabenow is running unopposed for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate. So there's always been this feeling that the Democrats need to balance their ticket in these off-year elections with governor, attorney general, et cetera. In this case, it appears to be women who have been selected. So there's a lot of thought that there should be an African-American man somewhere in there. As the African-American man who is running for governor, do you want voters to think about balancing the ticket?
What I want voters to think about is that we should not get bogged down in gender or race or ideological politics. That takes us into the wrong sphere. And I think, you know, it only provides for more division in our country. And clearly, the man in Washington is doing enough dividing. We don't need a lot of other folks adding to that.
So I have sat across the table from many candidates who are in your position. They are someone who is running, and in terms of name recognition, they are not at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. And what I've had candidates over the years tell me is name recognition is something that you can make up. So what's your plan to do that between now and August?
I have consistently been willing to meet citizens on their own terms. That means that I will continue to be a road warrior. We've logged, since the beginning of this campaign, probably an average of 2,000 road miles a week getting around the state. Last year, I made the biggest mistake in my life. I went to the UP for the first time in the winter. You know? And that was an experience. And I've been up to the UP 3 times. You know, now people say, well, why? There are only 400,000 people in the UP. They're citizens. They have to have a voice. There has to be an understanding of what that voice is saying, so that when I go to Lansing, I'm prepared to service everybody in this state, not just the folks who holler the loudest.
Bill Cobbs, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Gordon.
Bill Cobbs is one of 4 Democrats seeking his party's nomination for governor. The interview with Bill Cobbs was recorded on Thursday. He was planning to file petition signatures before tomorrow afternoon's deadline to appear on the August primary ballot. But his campaign manager says that a problem has been discovered with enough of those signatures that Cobbs won't be on the ballot. He plans to run a write-in campaign for governor.